Starting your own private medical practice can be the most exciting and rewarding thing you'll ever do in your career, but at the same time, it can be so daunting. Where do you start and how? That's why Gentem Health put together the podcast series, Journey to Private Practice, where we document and interview entrepreneurs, clinicians, investors, and the best in the industry to bring you actionable insights as how to start, grow, and scale your private practice. With insights tailored just for you, and actionable links in the notes, this is the Journey to Private Practice. Hey, podcast listeners, this is Omar Khatib, your host of Journey to Private Practice. Welcome back. And this time, you know, we have a guest coming on who caught our attention because of his success in TMS. What is TMS? TMS is transcranial magnetic stimulation. It's a non-invasive form of brain stimulation in which changing magnetic fields is used to cause electric currents at a specific area of the brain to change. And this is being used with a lot of success with patients who have issues with depression, anxiety, even smoking. And this has become a very popular alternative to medications. Now, our guest today is Dr. Kalyan Dandalar, who is the CEO and founder of DanMed TMS. Dr. Dandalar is on a mission to change and challenge the status quo of psychiatric care. And his goal is to make TMS available to as many people as possible. He was the first physician in Washington State to make it available to Medicare and Medicaid patients. And he continues to work with the National Clinical TMS Society to expand TMS treatments to pain, addiction, dementia, autism, and other diseases on top of depression and anxiety. So we have him on the episode today to share not only his journey around TMS as a physician and why he's so passionate about it, but more specifically, as he scaled DanMed TMS, and he has very, very big plans and a big vision for it, but sort of the trials and tribulations and the lessons learned along the way, because opening a private practice, especially in a new thing such as TMS, there's a lot of things, a lot of hurdles you have to overcome. And so he very graciously and vulnerably shares those lessons for other TMS practice owners to learn from him. So here's the episode with Dr. Kalyan Dandalar. Enjoy the show.
Hey everyone. Omar M. Khatib, your host for Journey to Private Practice. I'm joined by another fantastic guest, somebody that, you know, has come up on LinkedIn and social media because of his thought leadership when it comes to TMS, specifically in the private practice setting, and that's Dr. Dandalar. Dr. Dandalar, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Omar. Thanks for having me here. I'm doing great.
Absolutely. Now, first, I guess a congratulations is in due because I believe you guys just opened your third clinic, correct?
Yeah, we're very excited about that. Obviously, 2020 was not friendly to us. It was a large, long, hard road, but we have a very dedicated team. I'm very fortunate to have the team that I have up in Seattle. And we were able to endure through COVID, and we did not close a single day. We stayed open for our patients. That was the level of dedication of our team, too. So, and we're fortunate enough to be where we are and opening our third location now.
Absolutely. And that's fantastic. And it's such a great success story because I know so many physicians, the culture of medicine is to stay independent and have your own practice. In my opinion, you know, care is much better. And that the data even shows costs are lower. And I think the quality of care is also better. But, you know, getting to this point, there has to be some kind of journey. So first question for you is, what's your origin story? Like, how did you get into medicine?
Yeah, good question. So, well, you know, I grew up in Michigan, Midwest, and went to college out in Arizona. And I think, you know, medicine's always been in the background of my mind, right, of what I wanted to do. And it was just exciting for me, both from like loving biology and saying, okay, helping people will be a great thing, right? And I'm not going to lie, being of Indian origin, that was a big expectation too in the Indian community. You're either going to be a doctor or an engineer. And so, you know, doctors seemed more fun to me. And so going down that route, you know, I really was going to go surgery or psychiatry, the two fields that I really liked, you know, doing rotations and whatnot. I really enjoyed psychiatry a lot because of the transformative changes that you could really make in people's lives pretty quickly. So I ran a detox and rehab center after doing a fellowship in addiction psychiatry at University of Washington School of Medicine, and did that for about 10 years and realized a lot of my patients were relapsing due to depression, anxiety. Partnered up with some outpatient clinics as a partner. And what I've quickly realized is anyone can go ahead and do med management, right? The typical Prozac, Zoloft and whatnot. And so I was like, okay, if my own brother, sister, mother, if they had depression, anxiety, and they went to Stanford, Hopkins, Mayo, the creme de la creme, what would they get? TMS kept coming out. And I was, I interacted with the group that did TMS, and it just felt like a great fit. It's the next generation of treatment. And more we see it, it is that. It's the future of psychiatry. It's interventional treatment without being invasive. So we're going to get more and more indications. And I think there's a lot of growth here for the next generation or so into TMS for psychiatry.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the effects and impacts it'll have on patients is going to be so huge, just because, you know, you find a technological intervention that prevents going to the route of, you know, medication and drug and everything, which has its own thing. And of course, that increases cost to healthcare systems. So I think, you know, the future of medicine is really about the prediction and intervention early on. And I right. think especially given COVID, I know there's all this money thrown at COVID relief, something that I didn't see a whole lot of. What about, you know, COVID relief specifically for mental health? Right.
Absolutely. I think that we, for, I don't know how best to say it, but it seems like, you know, there's, it, the right thing was to hyper-focus on COVID. I get that from a, my gosh, pandemic standpoint. But I think now that we see a light at the end of the tunnel, we got the vaccines out and the cases are going down, we do need to address what we neglected is all the mental health ramifications that the lockdowns, the pandemic, that put on everyone across the board. And so we do need to address that. And I think there needs to be some focus on mental health now.
Absolutely. So quick shift. So, you know, with transcranial magnetic stimulation, it's hands down the most technologically advanced form to treat anxiety and depression, right? And again, in my opinion, this is best in a private practice setting, right? Just because of the nature of the therapy and everything. And, you know, customer experience is unrivaled in a practice setting versus a hospital. But you just opened your third clinic. What was it like opening your first clinic? And what was that transition like?
Yeah, no, good question. So I think I had the fortune of almost beta testing when I was a partner with four other clinics. We did TMS and we grew it to the largest TMS center in Washington. I did within like a matter of 9 months. I felt like we had to really focalize on just TMS as a entity. And that's why the team that I built, we regrouped, rebranded, and we opened up two centers in July 2019, probably the worst year to start a startup. But, you know, knock on wood, we survived through, you know, nobody predicted COVID and whatnot. So it was very exciting, actually, because the team was well-primed that I, you know, they're well-prepped for what we wanted to do, our mission, our vision to say, we're going to be the creme de la creme of interventional psychiatry in the Seattle area. And we're going to keep doing that. We're going to help other practices that don't have this operationalized TMS. So our next goal is to help a med management addiction center operationalize TMS in Arizona. Right now we are doing that for an entity that does primarily therapy. So we're adding on a little med management, but TMS is the focus to help the therapist to go, here's an additional resource to get that wraparound level of care for that patient.
That's fascinating. And you said something very interesting. I have to go back and dig into, but sure. you mentioned that you started this group with the mission and vision of being the creme de la creme, like we're going to be the best at it. And the add on to that is we're also going to teach others how to do this as well.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So I 100% agree with that, but that goes against the grain of like usual private practice, which is like, oh, be really good, but don't share the secret sauce. Why this kind of growth mentality? Like what made you think about this back then?
I think it's, well, you know, there's plenty of work to be done in the nation. There's not a shortage of people with depression, anxiety, right? So it's not for a lack of business. There's a lack of awareness for TMS right now because big pharma has a lot of money to throw at, you know, a new antidepressant or whatever that comes out, what they spend on a weekend. Device companies like TMS spend in like a year, right? So a lot of physicians that are mental health providers don't really know or understand TMS, what the indications are. And most patients don't know about it, right? So I think anything that will help elevate the game to say, all right, the standard of care is med management, but you know what? The new standard of care is interventional psychiatry with TMS. As long as we can help other practices do it, all boats rise with the tide. So it's a win-win.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. I mean, I have that same marketing philosophy when it comes to med device, which is the world I come from, because there's no shortage. And plus, in a way, you're kind of empowering and teaching others how to market the problem and the solution to the problem. And at that point, people decide, well, okay, I know about this problem. I know the solution. Well, who's the best thought leader for this? And it's no wonder why you guys focused on Seattle, but now you just opened your third clinic in Newport, California.
Absolutely. I think we're not region dependent. Of course, I want to do more de novo centers in Washington. I think Seattle is a very underserved area for mental health. So that's my, I guess, hub or where my family is and whatnot. So I do want to provide that community a lot more with more centers. And we are looking into a third center up in Seattle by end of year, maybe a fourth, God willing, and to reach out to as many folks as we can. But I'm not region dependent. If there's an opportunity to work in the Midwest, East Coast with a doctor that wants us to help them operationalize TMS, that's fine. If there's someone in Israel that wants us to help them operationalize TMS, the world is global. I mean, you know, I think we have to think very globally right now and not so much nationally. And the more we help our fellow human beings, wherever they are, it's a win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when you first started, you know, your very first clinic, aside from really pointing out a mission, a vision, again, like what's the aspirational goal we're going to go after, from an operational standpoint, what was your first order of business? Was it finding capital to invest in the technology? Was it looking for a building? Like what's the easy step? Because there are a lot of physicians who are listening to this, psychiatrists or not, who want to follow your steps, but they just don't know where to start and how.
Oh gosh. You know,
now I open a can of worms there.
No, it's a daunting question because it's very overwhelming, right? It's multifaceted. When you're taking on the role of saying, I'm going to start my own practice, you are the physician, you're the part-time marketing guy, you're the CEO, you're the CFO, you're everything, right? You're jack of all trades, master of none. So I think the most important thing is to surround yourself with a team that's good at what they do and you do what you do its best, right? So I had a couple of folks that are very good on the phone with prior authorizations, back office stuff, and saying, okay, we know how to talk to patients to get them, you know, the right information to get them to care. So I think surrounding yourself with the right team is really important, ensuring obviously that you know what your bottom line costs are for how much is my rent going to be, you know, and what am I going to spend on my overhead for the phone to my internet, blah, blah, blah. So you have to take all those into factor and to go, how can I start? What's my budget to start and budget that out and go, okay, how much money am I going to burn through for a month, 3 months, 6 months? And when are we going to start being profitable? So all these are things that you have to take into account. But the ideal scenarios never happen. There's always hiccups that happen. You know, for example, we lost several buildings that we wanted to rent because one didn't want a medical practice in them. So you're going to come up with challenges. Whatever you think your timeline is, it's always going to get changed, shifted. There was definitely a lot of challenges.
Got it. So it sounds like aside from, you know, first step is understanding like your goal and your mission and understanding what you're going to stand for and how you're going to do it. Finding a facility, of course, is important. And I agree with you, you know, it should be an easy lift, something where it's like maybe a short-term lease just to validate the idea, kind of like a minimally viable product, as they say here in the startup world. Yeah. But after that, the next step is, of course, like what technology you go to. And of course, everyone has their bias, you know, so you can mention the technology you prefer, but that's fine. But how do you evaluate the technology to invest in? And then what was the financing like? You know, like how did you think about that? You know, not everybody has $300,000-$400,000 in cash to buy a machine, right?
Absolutely. So there's a handful of TMS manufacturing devices, and some of them look nicer, some of them are more modular to use, and you go, okay, what's my volume going to be? And so the part of it is not even the expense of the machine. There's certain companies that will have a per treatment cost, and that really consumes a lot of your profits. And so it makes it less viable to treat Medicare and Medicaid patients that we get reimbursed less. So we kind of picked the one that was the leader to say, okay, this is the most cost efficient way to do it. So we're going to switch over to that. And we did switch over to that after going with a more expensive, easier to use device too. I wouldn't say this device is not as easy, but once you get the hang of it, it's not bad. It's like going from an iPhone to an Android, right? A little bit of changes, you get used to it and you go, oh, I love the Android now, you know, after you're done with the ease of the iPhone. And then luckily, good relationship with banking partner, buddy of mine that is, and so he was able to get us a good line of credit with reasonable terms. And so we can go ahead and service our debt in a very controlled way while we're wrapping up.
Got it. And, you know, one of the things is this question about volume. It's always hard to gauge. What were the metrics that you kind of looked to figure out, like, more or less, you can never predict it, but what did you use to kind of, you know, separate the signal from the noise and say, you know what, I'm pretty confident that conservatively, this is what the volume could look like, and that this is how it translates to me financing the technology in the space that we're going to be doing it.
I wish I was that savvy of a business guy. You got to take somewhat of a leap of faith, I think, you know, and go, okay, there's enough people with mental health issues. There's enough people with depression. I know they're going to come through the door. So did I noodle out all the numbers as best as I should? Probably not, you know, knowing what I know from when I operationalized it, when I was a minority partner in other clinics, I go, okay, I know enough patients will come along. I know I have enough goodwill in the community now with my name doing TMS that I ensured that, for example, the director of behavioral health at Valley Medical Center, which is by a rented office, had a good conversation with him to make sure all the TMS patients from their practice come to us because they weren't doing it internally. So ensuring that we were going to get the volume to say sustainable.
And that makes complete sense. I think, you know, it's a much easier lift if you're, say, a psychiatrist who's already in private practice, because you just it's an add-on to your core business. But if you don't have a private practice and you're looking to make that leap, you have to take that leap at some point. You'll never have enough numbers to make you feel fully comfortable. But Tell us, you know, again, one of my favorite topics is marketing, but tell us about some of the things, you know, strategies and tactics you use to ensure that as you took that leap of faith, you kind of had a soft landing. So you mentioned talking to a sort of local providers. Everything. What did that look like from a marketing standpoint? Both, I could say, you could say traditional and digital.
Yeah. You know, we didn't have the luxury of a marketing budget, and we still don't, to be bluntly honest. I wish we could spend the marketing dollars that we want to drive patients to us. But I think, you know, at some point in time we will. So we had really a lot of organic growth, ensuring that the insurance companies knew what our new addresses were because patients find you on the insurance company. It was really boots on the ground effort to actually go ahead and email the contacts that I had locally in the area, set up meetings, have them, let them know that we're opening up a clinic at such and such date, inviting them to an open house and letting the referring doctors know when your launch date is, what you're really focused on wanting to treat, and ensuring that they have enough volume, and spending a little bit of time and resources in that.
And that makes complete sense. And again, what's interesting is that you say you're not savvy, but you actually are, because what you just described is the same sort of process that tech companies we go through in product launches, right? Which is, you have your date that you're actually opening the practice, but beforehand, it's not, you know, you did some quote unquote, like open houses or demos, let people come in, you work with referring practices. How far in advance do you start doing that process back then? And then if you were to go back and do it again, would you stay with that same amount of time, or would you add more or less time?
I think it can't hurt you to add a little bit more time. We probably, if we launched in July 2019, I think we started, I started having the email conversations back in March 2019, about April 2019, around there. So a good 3-4 months, right? At least I think an entire quarter is a good idea to get people prepared to say, all right, are they going to be able to attend my open house or not? Give them enough lead time. And it's going to be multiple conversations too, right? Because their schedule, your schedule has to match up, and you want to meet them a couple times to kind of reiterate what's going on too. And it's just not a one-time touch. It's a continual touch.
Absolutely. It makes complete sense. You know, when it comes to, say, dealing, you know, when you have like either a physician liaison, or in my opinion, the doctor, actually, it's even better when the doctor does this doctor to doctor. But when you talk to the referring practices and you mention that you're doing this treatment and they should refer patients to you, do you send over any materials, for example, to make it easier for that practice to educate their patients? What does that look like?
Absolutely. So we do have our marketing brochure that we built in-house to make it very quick and easy. What's the easiest way to refer? What are we treating for? So keep it as simple as possible. So usually practices that are private too, they don't have a lot luxury of multiple staffing like large entities do, right? So it's usually the front desk person that answers phone calls, refers patients out, because the doc says, hey, can you refer patient X out for a psychiatrist? So making it very easy for that front desk staff to refer out to you is important.
Got it. Now, you know, shifting a little bit. So, you know, on the growth side, what's interesting is that, you know, once the practice starts getting some traction, right, there's always this question of what, you know, in any business, when do we expand and scale, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Because again, it's one of those things where, yeah, you could look at numbers, right? But yeah, part of it's intuition, part of it is objectivity. At what point did you say to yourself, well, you know what, we have enough momentum at this one clinic, it's time to expand and open a second one? How did you make that decision? And then geographically, what did you decide to do?
For me, I think it was a little different. It was more based on opportunities that was coming towards me. De novo clinics are always harder, where you say, I'm going to get another space, add another center. The ramp up time is longer. The burn rate of money is longer. So that you have to be a little bit more calculative on your cash flow and what you're doing, versus, you know, the opportunity to embed TMS into an existing practice like we're doing here in Brain Wellness Institute down in Newport Beach, California. That's an easier leap because it just adds to our base of, we have baseline costs no matter what. So the staff to say, okay, we're going to have additional patients, it's just the cost of the machine and the ramp up, and the cost of the ramp up decreases very significantly by doing these embedded models. So I didn't have to be as calculative about. But adding a third center de novo up in Washington, I was waiting for California to launch here with this embedded model, pick up an attraction, to start going back home to add more centers.
Hey, podcast listeners, we're going to take a quick break from the episode. We'll get right back to it. But if you're a TMS practice owner, I wanted to share a very interesting story with you. Like many TMS practice owners, Dr. Khalid Bouarshi had a dream, essentially, of treating patients with the latest and best technology, which is transcranial magnetic stimulation, and helping the patients find an alternative to medications. So he opened his first TMS practice in Florida right before the pandemic hit. And for any practice, this could be a death sentence. The practice saw less patients come in, and of course they had to suspend therapies because of the lockdown and pandemic. Now, to add to that, revenue was an issue. It was not getting better, especially when it comes to the reimbursement. And right around August of 2020, Dr. Bouarshi decided to partner with Gentem to accelerate and simplify and maximize his reimbursements. And what happened? Well, within 30 days, he saw an increase in revenue despite seeing less patients. And only a couple months later, his revenue during the pandemic actually increased by 15%. Now, if you talk to Dr. Barashi today, and he's one of our, you know, many happy partners, you know, he has a quote on our website sharing that Gentem essentially reduced his accounts receivable from an average of 90 days down to 20, as well as dramatically increased his revenue. Back then, it was about 15, 20%. It might be even higher now. Now, opening a TMS practice is a big venture, and you want all of your energy to be focused on what's most important, which is treating patients, not on the administrative burdens and complexities of getting reimbursed and your accounts receivable. That's where Gentem can help. Gentem is a Silicon Valley-based company founded by a Stanford-educated physician and a former Facebook software engineer. And what they found was that uncovering hidden revenue in your claims is actually the key to increasing cash flow and staying independent. And it's really only possible through the Gentem platform, where we do predictive reimbursement modeling, which introduces for the first time a truly data-driven approach when it comes to reimbursement and maximizing your revenue as a medical practice. The reason why that's important is that when you combine both technology and service, you're able to stay ahead of these changes in payer policies and always find ways to maximize and accelerate your reimbursements. We recruited the best from companies like Amazon, Google, JP Morgan, and others to build the infrastructure to power the future of health services and reimbursements. It's an easy-to-use platform that not only automates your billing process, but also pays you upfront for insurance claims. The people who love Gentem even more than practice owners is their internal team. Whether you have an office manager or a billing manager, Gentem has certified billers and revenue cycle managers that work hand-in-hand with your team. And if you're a practice owner or a physician that's looking to invest in TMS, but you're looking for capital, don't go and get handcuffed to a high interest bank loan. It's a terrible experience. You fill out this long, complicated application. You have to wait a long time, then finally get this high interest loan. Gentem builds financial products specific to those with private medical practices. So rather than a high interest bank loan, Gentem can advance capital to you based on your current accounts receivables and your future claims, meaning that you get the capital now and you pay back in the future when you get paid through those claims. So join other wildly successful TMS practice owners and partner with Gentem. Head over to gentem.com/TMS and claim not only your free demo, but we'll also do a free benchmark assessment to look at your billing and reimbursements and compare it to a national average based on the Medical Group Management Association's database to see how your practice is doing and whether or not you have lost revenue. Most practice owners are very surprised with what they find through this small assessment. So head over to gentem.com/TMS to find out more.
And when you mention embedded model, that's meaning like an existing practice, you're just adding on to the technology because the patient base and referral base is already established?
Correct, exactly.
Got it. So with on the side of the technology, right?
Yeah.
There's whether it's TMS or any other like in-practice capital equipment, there's always this question of, do we start with one machine, right? And sort of build the business from there, or do we start with two and try and do double time with it? That way we have a quicker path to profit. You know, there's no right answer for it, but like what's your approach to that?
You know, I right now I always go single machine for location to say we can always throw on another machine and throw on, you know, add onto that schedule. That's not a problem, right? So as long as you know the center you're in has that ability to expand. And usually, even if it doesn't, guess what? Your landlord's willing to always give you more space for more money. So I don't think that's ever an issue. So I started with one machine per location. Again, I'm not a business guy. So am I doing all the right things? Probably not. Am I making 101 mistakes? Probably. There's a lot of things that I think the next genesis is partnering up with the right business team to streamline and say, now we can scale you. You know, you've done a great, okay part of the base, but let's scale you now. And I don't think I have the wherewithal to really have that level of sophistication of scaling like a seasoned business person that is educated in that field to do so.
Got it. Now,
sort of the towards the tail end of this episode, I kind of want to ask you some, you know, sort of interesting questions, and I'm going to take you a little bit back to your training days. So just like you had M&M boards, so morbidity and mortality.
Yeah.
If you do the M&M approach to your private practice, like what were some, I guess, painful lessons that you learned and you look back and you're like, you know, definitely going to make sure that I don't do that again. What were some of those pearls so that people can learn through your story and avoid making those pitfalls?
Oh, where to begin? This list is so long.
What's the first thing that comes to mind?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is saying, okay, for example, we chose a device that we thought, okay, it'll be great for marketing because they offered X, Y, and Z. It was great for a startup when you didn't know anything about TMS. But since we got to that point of knowing how to run our own operations for TMS internally, we didn't need to pay the per treatment cost anymore. And there was no value add. And yet I was like, okay, do I continue with this because my staff is comfortable using this machine? So if I were to redo it, I would probably have shifted away from them immediately, more quickly, to a more cost-effective model, and helped with the training of staff more aggressively on being motivated to change that new device. And so sometimes, you know, you make decisions if you have a small team to go, gosh, my team really likes this machine, but it's not a good financial decision, right? Mm-hmm. So I think you have to divorce yourself a little bit and go, okay, well, you know what, numbers do count. And so that's some of the things I would say is like motivate your team and have those conversations on why you're making the switch. And especially if you have a small intimate team, they'll either get on board or they'll like, this is not for me. And you really want the team that gets on board, so they're going to see you through thick and thin.
Yeah. And I'm so happy you mentioned that because, and again, I'm going to piss off a lot of my peers in medical devices, but I think a lot of physicians who are taking this sort of journey on into private practice, it's very attractive when you see that, oh, if I go with this brand,
yeah,
the marketing is there. And then they give me like these marketing assets in the medical device industry. And I've spoken about this at conferences at Infinitum, does a very poor job of actually doing marketing to patients to actually drive them to the practice. So when you open practice, it's like, hey, yeah, the brand's there, but absolutely, I'm actually seeing patients come in traffic because there's an active role in the device manufacturer, which is not true. They, you know, they give you some tchotchke marketing stuff and right, it's like, good luck. Right?
You're 110% right on this.
I'm going to get a lot of really angry messages because that, but it's true. The fact of the matter is true.
It is. They just don't have the sophistication of marketing like Big Pharma does.
Yeah. And, you know, I would say even with Big Pharma, I mean, Big Pharma does, they are very sophisticated on non-branded marketing, patient communities, right, but at the other side of it, I mean, they spend so much money. I mean, you're right. You're very kind by saying that what pharma spends in a week, med device spends in a year. I would say sometimes that's like 3 years. But you know, again, I want to mention this to the audience, your advice earlier, which is so, so true. And this goes back to good traditional, not only business, but medicine. This is the same thing my father went through. My father is an immigrant from Iraq. When he started his surgical practice, first thing he did, he went and talked to other physicians in the community, asked for help, right? But again, it's not just a one phone call and that's it. It's a relationship, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How do you continue to nurture that relationship with your referring practices where I guess perhaps you're doing something that's maybe to their benefit or something that helps them? How do you keep that behavior there?
Yeah, it's important that you're helping your colleagues practice. It's not like you're just looking for referrals, right? End of the day, you want to be collaborative to go, okay, they're struggling in their practice to deal with depression because of the resources they have or don't have. And you go, how can you be an asset to their patient to ensure that, okay, you know what, we stabilize their depression. Now they're more compliant with their high blood pressure medications. They're more compliant with their, you know, diabetic medications. So there's less visits to the ER or the ED. And now this primary care doctor who's on the outpatient side is like, ah, thank you. My patient's more on cruise control. So it's that ensuring that, hey, are we doing a good enough job? Are you seeing better outcomes on the medical side because of what we're doing on the behavioral health side for you? So you want to ensure that you're adding value to them, and you're almost taking some of the burden off of their plate too.
That's a really interesting way of putting it. And I really like that, because it starts to put you more in the shoes of your peer and starting to see, well, the solution that I provide solves this problem, and this problem is having an impact on my peer's ability to care for this patient. Because unless this gets taken care of, whether it's the anxiety or depression, the compliance with, let's say, medication or all these other things is never going to be there. And they keep going back.
Yep, exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. You, along the way, you know, and I noticed that prior to you being in practice, I think you're still in academia or not so much?
When I was in the previous practice, I had the luxury of having a larger staff and taking on nurse practitioner students for rotations. Not too proactive in that right now, just, you know, trying to get to a baseline of growth to say, okay, now we can take, my goal is to get future nurse practitioners through our clinics and hopefully medical students and even residents in psychiatry. The more students that we get exposure to, it's just for the benefit long-term.
Absolutely. So my question to you is that a lot of physicians, whether they're in training or they're in a hospital setting, and again, it's no knock on anybody in academia, but people in academia, they have their own bias towards academia and against, let's say, private practice. So back when you were thinking about doing this and getting started, do you have any mentors? Do you have anybody who you looked up to or inspired by? And what kind of lessons do you get from them?
You mean back in academia or across the board, even in like just starting my career and whatnot?
I would say both. And more specifically, like when you made that, you know, that leap.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think one of my mentors is the person that gave me my first job, Richard St. Peter. He was the CEO of Schuylkill Hospital at the time when I was doing my fellowship in addiction psychiatry, and just a very dynamic personality. He was one of the guys who took Petco IPO originally, and I think he really was a mentor in the sense that he ensures, I always bounce ideas off of him even now to go, okay, am I keeping the train on the tracks? Are there certain things that are not going well on the business side to ensure that we stay viable for our patients? And I think he was a very good confidant for me throughout the process of being able to knock ideas around. And he very much likes a lot of things as far as what's the latest and greatest in tech for depression, anxiety, addiction. So, you know, just bouncing this idea off of him, It was great. It was a good sounding board.
Fantastic. Darth Nandala, you know, again, thanks for spending some time with us. Just to kind of wrap things up, you know, we like to do a little bit of a rapid fire at the end of these. And so I'm going to ask you some questions. You can take as long as you want to answer, but the sooner you answer it, the faster I'll move to the next question. Okay.
Okay. No worries.
All right. So my first question to you, what was the most memorable but painful thing someone ever told you, and how did that change your life?
Lack of patience is your biggest enemy.
And who told you that?
Richard told me that. My significant other told me that. Multiple people have told me that. So it's helped me a lot to, and I'm still working at it, to learn patience through dealing with it as being a leader of the team, right? So I think it's very important to have patience to slow down and think about it from other people's perspective.
Absolutely. I love that. All right. Next question. You know, as a physician, you know, continuing education is in our culture. It's in our genes. Like, it just does not stop. What's a book that you have gifted most often to people, and why?
Best book I can think of is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. I love that book. I know it's dated, but it's still very relevant for life. Forget about your career. I mean, across the board for career, relationships. I think it's a great book if you can follow it. Even if you can follow 10% of it, you're doing great. It's a hard book to follow.
100%. I actually have that in my bookshelf. It's such a classic. And yeah, it's, I feel like once a book, if it's more than 30 or 40 years old, if it's still being read, that's a classic. Yeah. It lasted the test of time. So my next question to you is, and my last one is, you know, there's a lot of physicians, whether they're in practice, in academia, in residency, medical students, who are listening to this talk right now, and you'll never know how impactful your words are going to be. So let's pretend that for the next year, in front of every hospital, in every major city, for a whole year, there's one billboard. And every physician who's even slightly aspiring to go on a journey to go into private practice is going to see this billboard. What message do you put on that billboard for them to see?
This is a very tough one to answer. I'm sorry. I don't know if I have an answer for this one because there's so much to be said on that one billboard. Gosh,
What's the message that you put to inspire specific action? What would you put there to inspire?
I would say if someone is on the fence or right now, there's a lot of I'm going to answer this in a very long-winded way. So right now there's a lot of consolidation in the medical industry, meaning practices being gobbled up by large entities. And now you have a bunch of for-profit, non-profit entities that you're a shift worker as a physician. You really are. You're just another cog in the machine, and you're almost not human to them anymore, right? So to the bean counters and the administrators. And I think we need to empower physicians to say, okay, you know what? You got into this field to help patients first and foremost. That's why you got into this, right? So you're not, and to really empower yourself is to go back into private practice and to step away from these large entities where you're just a number to them. Your patient is just a number. You gain so much gratification saying, you know what, I am going to spend that extra hour with this patient because it's the right thing to do. And you know what, there is this toxic patient that even though the patient satisfaction scores might not go up, I'm going to kick him out of my practice because they yelled and screamed at most of my staff. So you're restricted from doing certain things like that if you're part of a large entity. But in private practice, you can take care of your team that believes in you. You can give that boutique wonderful level of care that you want for the patients on your terms.
I love that. I love that. And actually, I think it's so much better than something that's summed up on a billboard. We'll have to figure that out. But, you know, just to kind of share, you know, again, you know, my father, he's retired now, but some of his friends who are in their 70s are not. And all of them started in private practice. And he was telling me the other day, he's like, you know, so-and-so, you're never going to believe it, but they actually just joined a big group now, or so-and-so is now working for this hospital. And when I hear it in his voice, yeah, I can hear how sad he is about that, right? Because they're going into the machine, and they're leaving their independence, their freedom, and more importantly, they don't get to decide how to do medicine. Someone else is going to tell them.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I can't think of a better way to wrap up like an episode on journey to private practice. But Dr. Dalal, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to leave it in the show notes, but what's the best way for people to follow you online? What are your social handles?
So we, obviously our website, www.danmedtms.com. We have a Facebook page as well. Our Twitter account's probably not so active, but we do have a blog that I will say we're not doing our blog updates like we should, just focusing on taking care of patients, right? So I think our website has a lot of good information, just objective, not even from our clinic, but it's, you know, .edu.gov studies on TMS if you want to learn, educate yourself about it. So yeah, that would be a great way to start.
Fantastic. And I'll leave a link also. I know you're getting more active on LinkedIn and love your posts there. So I'll leave that there. But Dr. Dallas, thank you so much for joining us. So thank you all. This is another episode of Journey to Private Practice. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Omar.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Journey to Private Practice. If you like the show, hey, help other medical practice owners like yourself discover it. Please leave us a 5-star review, say a few nice things, and if anything, send this episode to somebody else, because I don't know about you, but for me, anytime anything good has happened in my life, it's been as a result of other people helping me. So forward this on, pay it forward, and we'll see you next time.